Tom Bashiri has joined us here on Sports Byline, power forward in the NBA for 10 years, starting out with Philadelphia with the Warriors there, and then when they moved west to San Francisco, stayed with them, and then also played for the Seattle Supersonics for 4 years. Tom, you have an interesting life because you were born in China and did not come to the United States until later on in your life when you were a child as well. Tell me a little bit about, growing up, being in China, and you were in an internment camp, were you not, just outside of Tokyo?
I was, Ron. My parents escaped the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, and like many of the Russian people who were sort of on the side of the emperor, I guess, fled east across Siberia and settled in Harbin, Manchuria, and I was born there. My sister and I were born there, and we were headed to the United States. My father had managed to get over a little bit ahead of us to set up a household, and as we, my mother and my sister and I, were on our way, the Second World War broke out, and the three of us were taken along with a lot of women and children to a concentration camp in Tokyo, and we spent the war there.
Tell me a little bit about the first time you either saw basketball or you picked up a basketball.
Well, I was always a pretty good athlete right from the start. I was always tall, and I had learned to play tennis. My mother taught me to play tennis. She was quite good, but I didn't pick up a basketball until a fellow named Cappy Lavin, who used to be a player for the University of San Francisco, quite a good guy, and he was a playground director at my elementary school, and he taught me how to play basketball in the seventh grade. And Cappy, by the way, is the father of Steve Lavin, who's the coach at St. John's right now and was the coach at UCLA. And Cappy taught me to play and in the seventh grade, and then, I just took it from there. I loved basketball right from the start. I was always tall. I had good rebounding skills. I was fairly tenacious, and I loved it. And I have to say, actually, to be truthful, I think I played, when I think about it, I played basketball. I played sports because it was a good way to be an American. I was a Russian kid. I came to the States. I didn't speak English. And how kids can be. They can be cruel. So I knew that one of the ways that you get in with friends and other schoolmates is to be a good athlete. I had a double incentive to learn to play the game well.
Yeah, you once said, I'm pretty sure the reason I played basketball had very little to do initially with some kind of love for the game. I think initially it had to do with becoming an American. I was an immigrant, so to me, playing basketball was crucial. You also said that you understood why poor kids, African-American kids in particular, really gravitate to this game as a vehicle for getting out of their environment. Explain that a little bit further.
Well, I mean, in terms of my own experience, it was a way for me to get out of my environment. My environment was an environment of poverty, and we weren't tremendously poor, but we were poor, and we were immigrants, so we were in a sort of a little Russian ghetto in San Francisco, and although I certainly can't claim to have gone through the African-American experience, which is, fraught with so many more obstacles than I had to face, but it was, for me, I felt I had to do something to get out of it, and sports is a way to do that. People take notice of you when you're an athlete, when you're a good athlete. You're treated differently. You're treated better, frankly. I think most African-Americans would subscribe to that. I mean, they would probably, any black player playing ball was probably treated better, had a better access to teachers, tutors, and the whole ball of wax. And so I identify with that and understand what they went through.
Your immigrant attitude of being an immigrant, it really worked to your advantage. Wasn't it part of the fire in your belly to play? Because you said, I always thought I was an underdog. It made me a better player. I always felt like I was battling uphill.
Well, think I was always battling uphill somewhat because I was always undersized for the position I played. I was undersized center in high school. I was an undersized center in college, and I was certainly an undersized power forward at 6 foot six and a half. I played power forward. I always wanted to be the finesse forward, but then unfortunately 2 years after I was in the league, our team drafted a guy named Rick Barry, and then they said, well, you better get your points. You got to go on the boards to get them. So I learned how to be a power forward. So I've sort of always battled uphill a little bit, but that's okay. I think that I don't think I was a supremely gifted athlete, but I think I was always a tenacious athlete, determined. And, you know, I've had a lot of people call me stubborn. Well, that's okay, too. And I think that's what made me a good rebounder. I think I was a very good rebounder, and offensive and defensive rebounder. So I think without that fire in the belly, I don't think I would have been nearly as good.
You led the league 1 year in fouls, and who was it that dubbed you the Mad Russian?
I don't remember, but it was an article in one of the sports magazines, and I can't tell you exactly who the author is. Might have been Sandy Padway with the Philadelphia Inquirer, but I'm not certain.
Also, after you stopped playing after 10 years, you said you were lost for a while. Explain to me a little bit about that.
I think that, I don't think I'm unique. I think there are a lot of players who have gone through the professional experience, come out on the other end, and really don't know what to do with themselves. Today, a lot of the professional athletes are paid such grandiose amount of money that you know, if they treat their money wisely, they don't have to worry about that. In my day, you know, you had to go out and get a job, and I simply didn't know anything else to do. I was always an athlete, so I was sort of like looking around for something that, you know, had the same energy level that gave me as much thrill, and I couldn't find anything. You know, jobs, you know, professional basketball, that was just an absolute blessing all the time to get up in the morning and know you had to just play ball. It was wonderful. The workforce is a little bit different. So I wasn't very happy about my life at all until I found teaching. I discovered teaching high school was something I wanted to do, and it allowed me it gave me the chance to feel energetic again, and teaching did that for me. So I was lucky to find teaching in the end.
Yeah, you said I came down very hard from basketball. You tried your hand at coaching in the ABA with Carolina, but you got frustrated, I think. And I've heard other great players or players that took playing their sport seriously. I remember Frank Robinson, the Hall of Fame baseball player, saying to me that he got frustrated because he did not see his players putting in the same effort, the same commitment that he did. And I sense that, from what I read, that you felt the same way in the coaching.
I did. Frank and I felt, you know, feel exactly the same way. I couldn't understand guys that did not play 100%. And couldn't figure out how to motivate them other than swear at them and yell at them. And, of course, that wasn't a very good strategy. Yes, it just frustrated the heck out of me. And frankly, I have to tell you, I wasn't a very good coach. Frank Robinson might have been a good baseball manager, but knew the game. I found that playing the game, coaching the game was very different, and I found that out very quickly. And I didn't have a good, I didn't see the court very well as a whole. I always knew how to play my position well, but I wasn't a strategic player. I was an energy kind of player. So I don't think I made a very good coach, and I was happy to leave coaching behind for something else.
You were also given another name, and that was the Renaissance Man, and as you already touched on, you went into teaching, but you also became a pretty good writer, and you wrote poetry as well. You studied with the U.S. Poet Laureate Mark Strand for a period of time up in Washington at the University of Washington, and you once wrote a poem to Wilt Chamberlain. Do you recall it off the top of your head?
No, I wish. Well, if I'd known that you'd want me, I would have found it and recited it. I don't know. I don't memorize poems, and I can't. But I did. I do remember that I I wrote this poem really actually as I reflected back on that 100-point game, and it was about that 100-point game, and then driving back in a bus, looking out the window at the Pennsylvania Amish countryside, and as I was driving in the dark and thinking back on that game, that was what it was all about. Yes, poetry has been very much an important part of my life, and I've got a couple of books out, and I studied at the university not only with Mark Strand, but I also studied, got my Master's of Fine Arts degree at the University of Iowa Writers Workshop, and met some wonderful people there with whom I'm still in contact.
There is another story I have to ask you about, Tom, and that is the fact that Wilt Chamberlain went off to Philadelphia to play with the team back there, if I'm not mistaken, and you guys played him in the NBA championship, but there was a story about you trying to pick a fight with him. What was that about?
Well, that's when I was up in Seattle already, Ron. I was playing for the Sonics, and Wilt was playing with the Lakers.
Okay.
And I think that's true. You know, when you get old as I am, you forget things. So we were up playing, and you know, I can't for the life of me remember what it was that ticked me off. But by God, something happened, and I told Wilt actually that if he did it again, I was going to punch him, and of course he didn't believe me, and he did it again, and I did throw a punch at him, and I missed, and then I threw another punch at him, and I sort of waded in, and he held my head. It was, you know, if you could have had a, you know, film that, it would have been absolutely fantastically funny, because he was holding my head, and I was throwing punches at him, and I was hitting nothing but air.
Yeah, you said he laughed at me. Actually, if you'd made a movie out of it, it would have been pretty hilarious, because I was swinging at him and he was holding my forehead, so it was a classic cartoon-like position. We have a couple minutes left here, and I just want to ask you, is when you reflect back on your life, you know, a kid that was born in China, was in an internment camp in Tokyo, comes to the United States in 1946, finds basketball, plays professional basketball in a game that will never be repeated with an athlete like Wilt Chamberlain scoring 100 points, and you reflect back on it in your personal moments, Tom. What is it that you think about? What means the most to Tom Mascheri?
Well, to me, the players I played against and the players I played with, the camaraderie I had and the joy I had of teamsmanship meant the most to me. The game itself was beautiful, but the guys that I played with and against were even more beautiful.
And you think about the games that you played and the way the game was played. Are you surprised in any way that you gravitated and went down the path that you went down?
Well, sort of. I'm not sure. Poetry, for one thing, was very much a part of my house. You know, my father read poetry aloud. My mother did, too. It's very much a part of the Russian tradition. So I guess I'm not too terribly surprised that I gravitated towards poetry. I can't tell you how I got into teaching, really. I guess I did some poetry in the schools for a couple of times. I felt comfortable in the classroom. And I like teenagers a lot. So it turned out that I found at least two niches in my life that I think I did well and I enjoyed greatly.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but you also once said, I love teaching. It was sort of like playing professional basketball again. Every day you had to be up. Every day was a new game. And I guess that kind of sums up your life and your perspective and the way you played the game as well, doesn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, I don't believe much in retiring. Right now I'm writing a novel, and I've got it completed, and it's being edited, and I'm pitching it to an agent, so I'm starting a whole new career here as a novelist. So I'm just moving right along.
Tom, I want to thank you very much for spending so much time with us talking about that great night in Hershey, Pennsylvania, a night that, as you said, and most people agree with you, no player will ever score 100 points in a game like Wilt Chamberlain did against the New York Knicks. So thank you very much for your time. Take care.
You're welcome. Take care of yourself.
Tom Mascheri with us again, a power forward. You heard him say he was a little bit on the small side to be a power forward in professional basketball at that time. Played for 10 years, starting out with the Philadelphia Warriors and then came west with the San Francisco Warriors and finished up his career with the Seattle Supersonics. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.